The Truth News Network.
Identity politics is poisoning the American well of freedom.
There is an antidote.
It's right here at TNN, Truth News Network. For today's chapter, here's Dan Newman.
Thank you so much for joining us today. It's going to be a special day. We have got something very special in store for you. And we're going to go down the road again, a little further down the Robert Mueller special counsel, special investigator role. We spent a little time talking to you about him and his past in the past few weeks, but we're going to dig in today. We've got some really good information, and it's not from me. It's not from the research staff at truthnewsnet.org either. It's from Congressman Louis Gohmert, Republican from Texas, who represents the 1st Congressional District in Northeast Texas. His southern drawl disarms many who, when hearing Gohmert speak, assume he's slow, as his Texas drawl indicates that he just might be. Not so. During his long stay in the House, he's compiled a long list of legislative accomplishments, and at the same time, the respect of his peers for his dawning willingness to take on political foes no matter what shape or form those foes may take. He may be best known in recent days for taking on former FBI intelligence officer Peter Strzok in that recent Joint Oversight Committee hearing regarding Mr. Strzok's involvement in the Clinton email investigation and also the early stages of Mueller's looking into collusion with the Russians, alleged collusion by members of the Trump campaign. Congressman Gohmert, in his political career, has had many interactions with Mr. Mueller. They've got a long history, and those have prompted Gohmert to question Mueller's integrity and his work ethic. To that end, I feel it's extremely important for TruthNewsNet.org to step aside from our normal research processes for instead the very knowledgeable and learned perspective of Robert Mueller from Congressman Gohmert, who has far more personal experience with Mr. Mueller than we have. His perspective is detailed and underpinned with facts in this story, which substantiate those opinions, making the story a little bit longer than normal. So because of that, we're going to share Congressman Gohmert's personal Mueller account titled Robert Mueller Unmasked in several installments. And you're going to like this. This is a great spot to do this via podcast because as we share it, you'll find that this reads and sounds, instead of like a congressional report or a narrative from a congressman, a spy novel. So let's get going. Part one of Robert Mueller Unmasked, presented by Congressman Louis Gohmert. Now, these words that you'll hear for the rest of this podcast today are actually those of Congressman Louis Gohmert from Texas. We get started with this. Robert Mueller has a long, sordid history of illicitly targeting innocent people that is a stain upon the legacy of American jurisprudence. He lacks the judgment and credibility to lead the prosecution of anyone. I do not make these statements lightly. Each time I prepared to question Mueller during congressional hearings, the more concerned I became about his work ethic. Then as I went back to begin compiling all that information in order to recount personal interaction with Mueller, the more clearly the big picture began to come into focus. At one point, I had to make the decision to stop adding to this, or it would turn into a far too lengthy project. My goal was to share some firsthand information as other Republican members of Congress had requested, adding, "You seem to know so much about him." This story, article, letter is prepared from my viewpoint to help better inform the reader about the special prosecutor leading the effort to railroad President Trump through whatever manufactured charge he can allege. Judging by Mueller's history, it doesn't matter who he has to threaten, harass, prosecute, or bankrupt to get someone to be willing to allege something, anything, about our current president. It certainly appears Mueller will do what it takes to bring down his target ethically or unethically based on my findings. What does former Attorney General Eric Holder say? Sounds like much the same thing I just said. Holder, quote, "I've known Bob Mueller for 20 or 30 years. My guess is he's just trying to make the case as good as he possibly can." Holder does know him. He has seen Mueller at work when Holder was obstructing justice and acting in contempt of Congress. He knows Mueller's FBI framed innocent people and had no remorse in doing so. Let's look at what we know. What I have accumulated here is absolutely shocking upon the realization that Mueller's disreputable, twisted history speaks to the character of the man placed in a position to attempt to legalize a coup against a lawfully elected president. Any Republican who says anything resembling Bob Mueller will do a good job as special counsel, or Bob Mueller has a great reputation for being fair, or anything similar, A, wants President Trump indicted for something and removed from office regardless of his guilt or innocence, B, is intentionally ignorant of the myriad of outrageous problems permeating Mueller's professional history, or C, is cultivating future Democrat votes when he or she comes before the Senate someday for a confirmation hearing. There is simply too much clear and convincing information available to the contrary. Where other writers have set out information succinctly, I have quoted them with proper attribution in this story. My goal is to help you see what I have found. In his early years as FBI director, most Republican members of Congress gave Mueller a pass in oversight hearings, allowing him to avoid tough questions. After all, we were continually told Bush appointed him. I gave him easy questions the first time I questioned him in 05 out of deference for his Vietnam service. Yet the longer I was in Congress, the more conspicuous the problems became. As I've said before of another Vietnam vet, just because someone deserves our respect for service or our sympathy for things that have happened to them in the service, that does not give them the right to harm our country later. As glaring problems came to light, I toughened my questions in the oversight hearings. But first, let's look at a little bit of Mueller's history. Mueller's minions helped mobster Whitey Bulger eliminate mob competitors. The Boston Globe noted Robert Mueller's connection with the Whitey Bulger case in an article entitled "One Lingering Question for FBI Director Mueller." The Globe said this: Mike Albano, former parole board member who was threatened by two FBI agents for considering parole for the men in prison for a crime they did not commit, was appalled that later that same year, Mueller was appointed FBI director because it was Mueller, first as an assistant U.S. attorney, then as the acting U.S. attorney in Boston, who wrote letters to the parole and pardon boards throughout the 80s opposing clemency for four men framed by FBI lies. Of course, Mueller was also in that position while Whitey Bulger was helping the FBI cart off his criminal competitors, even as he buried bodies in shallow graves along the Neponset. And in the written article, folks, there's a link there to that Boston Globe story. If you want to go back to the homepage of the website, you can click on that link and read the entire story. Mueller was the head of the criminal division as assistant U.S. attorney, then as acting U.S. attorney. I could not find any explanation online by Mueller as to why he insisted on keeping the defendants in prison that FBI agents, in the pocket of Whitey Bulger, had framed for a murder they did not commit. Make no mistake, these were not honorable people he had incarcerated, but it was part of a pattern that eventually became quite clear that Mueller was more concerned with convicting and putting people in jail he disliked, even if they were innocent of the charges, than he was with ferreting out the truth. I found no explanation as to why he did not bear any responsibility for the $100 million paid to the defendants who were framed by FBI agents under his control. The Boston Globe said, thanks to the FBI's corruption, taxpayers got stuck with the $100 million bill for compensating the framed men, two of whom, Greco and Tamilio, died in prison. The New York Times explained the relationship this way. In the 1980s, while agent Mr. Connolly was working with Whitey Bulger, Mr. Mueller was assistant U.S. attorney in Boston, in charge of the criminal division, and for a period was the acting United States attorney here presiding over Mr. McConnelly and Mr. Bulger as top echelon informants. Official of the Massachusetts State Police and the Boston Police Department had long wondered why their investigations of Mr. Bulger were always compromised before they could gather evidence against him, and they suspected that the FBI was protecting him. If Mr. Mueller had no knowledge that the FBI agents he used were engaged in criminal activity, then he certainly was so incredibly blind that he should never be allowed back into any type of criminal case supervision. He certainly helped continue to contribute to the damages of the framed individuals by working so hard to prevent them from being paroled out of prison, even as their charges were on their way to being completely thrown out. Notice all evidence of a pattern throughout this article. The leaking of information to disparage Mueller's targets. In the Whitey Bulger case, the leaks were to organize crime, the mob. One of the basic tenets of our democratic republic is that we never imprison people for being bad. Anyone in prison has to have committed a specific crime for which they are found guilty. Not in Mueller's world. He has the reverse list of Santa Claus, and if you're on his list, you get punished even if you're framed. He never apologizes when the truth is learned, no matter how wrong or potentially criminal or malicious the prosecution was. In his book, you deserve what you get even if you did not commit the crime for which he helped put you away. This is one example, but as Al Pacino once famously said, I'm just getting warmed up. Congressman Kurt Weldon defeated by Mueller's FBI. And remember, telling this story, I'm reading it, but this is Congressman Louis Gohmert, Republican congressman from Texas. He goes on. During my first term in Congress, 05 to 06, Congressman Kurt Weldon delivered some powerful and relentless allegations about the FBI having prior knowledge that 9/11 was coming. He alleged loudly and vociferously that there was documentary evidence to show that 9/11 could have been prevented and those 3,000 lives saved if the FBI had done their job. My recollection is that he may have even accused them of intentionally turning their heads. He held up documents at times while making these claims in speeches on the floor of the House of Representatives. I was surprised that FBI Director Mueller seemed to take those allegations without the major response that appeared to be appropriate, at least to me. It seemed he should either admit the FBI made significant mistakes or refute the allegations. Little did I know Mueller's FBI was preparing a response, but it certainly was not the kind of response that I would have expected if an honorable man had been running that once hallowed institution. You can read two of Congressman Weldon's speeches on the House floor that are linked below. After reading the excerpts I have provided, you may get a window into the mind of the FBI director or someone under Mueller's control at the FBI. The FBI literally destroyed Congressman Weldon's public service life, which foreclosed his ability to use a national platform to expose what he believed were major problems in the FBI fostered under the Clinton administration. Here is but one such excerpt of a speech wherein he spoke of the failure of the FBI leadership, then under the direction of the Clinton administration, as it ultimately came within Mueller's control right before 9/11. They failed to even accept from the military any information on the very terrorist who would later go on to commit the atrocities of 9/11, much less act upon it. They gleaned this information through the development of a surveillance technology in a project called Able Danger. Here is Representative Kurt Weldon. Mr. Speaker, back in 1999, when I was chair of the Defense Research Subcommittee, the Army was doing cutting-edge work on a new type of technology to allow us to understand and predict emerging transnational terrorist threats. That technology was being done at several locations, but was being led by our Special Forces Command. The work that they were doing was unprecedented, and because of what I saw there, I supported the development of a national capability of a collaborative center that the CIA would just not accept. In fact, on November 4th of 1999, 2 years before 9/11, in a meeting in my office with the Deputy Secretary of Defense, Deputy Director of the CIA, Deputy Director of the FBI, we presented a 9-page proposal to create a national collaborative center. When we finished the brief, the CIA said we did not need that capability. And so before 9/11, we did not have it. When President Bush came in after a year of research, he announced the formation of the Terrorism Threat Integration Center, exactly what I had proposed in 1999. Today, it is known as the NCTC, the National Counterterrorism Center. But, Mr. Speaker, what troubles me is not the fact that we did not take those steps. What troubles me is that I now have learned in the last 4 months that one of the tasks that were being done in 99 and 2000 was a top secret program organized at the request of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, carried out by the general in charge of our Special Forces Command, a very elite unit focused on information regarding Al-Qaeda. It was a military language effort to allow us to identify the key cells of Al-Qaeda around the world and to give the military the capability to plan actions against those cells so they could not attack us as they did in 1993 at the World Trade Center, at the Khobar Towers, the USS Cole attack, and the African embassy bombings. What I did not know, Mr. Speaker, up until June of this year, was that secret program called Able Danger actually identified the Brooklyn cell of Al-Qaeda in January and February of 2000, over 1 year before 9/11 ever happened. In addition, I learned that not only did we identify the Brooklyn cell of Al-Qaeda, but we identified Mohammed Atta as one of the members of that Brooklyn cell, along with three other terrorists who were the leaders of the 9/11 attack. I have also learned, Mr. Speaker, that in September of 2000, again, over 1 year before 9/11, that Able Danger team attempted on three separate occasions to provide information to the FBI about the Brooklyn cell of Al-Qaeda. And on three separate occasions, they were denied by lawyers in the previous administration to transfer that information. Mr. Speaker, this past Sunday on Meet the Press, Louis Free, FBI director at the time, was interviewed by Tim Russert. The first question to Louis Free was in regard to the FBI's ability to ferret out the terrorists. Louis Free's response, which can be obtained by anyone in this country as part of the official record, was, quote, "Well, Tim, we are now finding out that a top secret program of the military called Able Danger actually identified the Brooklyn cell of Al-Qaeda and Mohammed Atta over a year before 9/11. And what Louis Free said, Mr. Speaker, is that kind of actual data could have allowed us to prevent the hijacking that occurred on September 11th. So now we know, Mr. Speaker, that military intelligence officers working in a program authorized by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the general in charge of Special Forces Command, identified Mohammed Atta and three terrorists a year before 9/11, tried to transfer that information to the FBI, and were denied. And the FBI director has now said publicly, if he would have had that information, the FBI could have used it to perhaps prevent the hijackings that struck the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania, and perhaps saved 3,000 lives and changed the course of world history. Wow. Are you enjoying this? This information? And much, much more that's just ahead will blow your mind. Sit tight, right back in a moment on the Truth News Network.
Long live the courageous.
May God bless and keep you always. May you
the tenacious.
May you always do for others.
The ones who push forward.
Do for you.
And give back. Long live the greater good, the helping hand, those who fall and get back up, and long live the truck with the strength to overcome, the will to outwork. Last them all. Ram, proven to last.
Uncertain about what you see and hear in mainstream media?
Worried about getting the truth? No worries anymore. Get the truth, only the truth, at TNN, the Truth News Network. TruthNewsNet.org.
And we're back to it. We're talking about Louis Gohmert, Congressman from East Texas, his story, firsthand accounts of his dealings with Robert Mueller. And we just read you a speech given by Congressman Weldon about the information, the intelligence that was actually available and presented to several intelligence agencies and Congress prior to the attacks on 9/11 that included information about it. Congressman Weldon tried to hold those accountable in the FBI and the CIA that he felt mishandled actionable intelligence, which he said could have thwarted the 9/11 terrorist if only top officials at the FBI and others had allowed our rank-and-file law enforcement and military to engage in such a battle. He recounted many examples of how they failed to do so. Congressman Gohmert continued, "Understand I am not a 9/11 denier nor a conspiracy advocate. I'm simply relaying things for which Congressman Weldon lambasted people at the top of the FBI and other places. In 2006, the Robert Mueller-led FBI took horrendously unjust actions to derail Kurt Weldon's re-election bid just weeks before the vote, actions that were later described as a hit job in this WND article. Each of Weldon's 10 previous re-elections had been by sizable margins. Polls showed he was up by 5 to 7 points in the fall of 06. 3 weeks prior to the election, however, a national story ran about Weldon based upon anonymous sources. There we go, folks. Anonymous sources, anonymous information. That an investigation was underway against him and his daughter, alleging illegal activities involving his congressional work. Weldon had received no prior notification of any such investigation and was dumbfounded that such a story would run, especially since he regularly briefed the FBI and intelligence agencies on his work. A week after the news story broke, alleging a need to act quickly because of the leak, FBI agents from Washington raided the home of Weldon's daughter at 7 a.m. on a Monday morning. Local TV and print media had all been alerted to the raid in advance and were already in position to cover the story. Within hours, Democratic protesters were waving caught red-handed signs outside Weldon's district office in Upper Darby. In the ensuing 2 weeks, local and national media ran multiple stories implying that Weldon, too, must have been under investigation. Given the coverage, Weldon lost the election. To this day, incredibly, no one in authority has talked to Weldon or his daughter about the raid or the investigation. There was no follow-up, no questions, no grand jury interrogations, nothing. 1 year after the raid, the local FBI office called Weldon's daughter to have her come get the property that had been removed from her home. That was it. The raid ruined the career of Weldon and his daughter. Though the WND article blamed the Clintons and Sandy Berger for orchestrating the FBI hit job, we can't lose sight of the fact that the FBI head at the time was Robert Mueller. Please understand what former FBI officials have told me. The FBI would never go after a member of Congress, House or Senate, without the full disclosure to and blessings of the FBI director. Even if the idea on how to silence Kurt Weldon did not come from Director Mueller himself, it surely had his blessing and encouragement, though, and at best, his silence and inaction. The early morning raid by Mueller's FBI with all the media outside, obviously alerted by the FBI, had achieved its goal of colluding to abuse the federal justice system to silence. The silence was of Kurt Weldon by ending his political career. Mueller's FBI worked it like a charm. If the Clintons and Berger manipulated Weldon's re-election to assure his defeat, they did it with the artful aid of Mueller, all while George W. Bush was president. Is any of this sounding familiar? People say those kinds of things just don't happen in America. They certainly seem to when Mueller was in charge of the FBI, and they certainly seem to while he is special counsel as well. It appears clear that President Obama and his myrmidons knew of Mueller's reputation, that he could be used to take out their political opponents should such extra-legal actions become politically necessary. To the great dismay of the many good, decent, and straight-arrow FBI agents, Obama begged Mueller to stay on for 2 more years than the 10 years the law allowed. Obama then asked Congress to approve Mueller's waiver, allowing him to stay on 2 extra years. Perhaps the leaders in Congress did not realize that they were doing what they were doing in approving it. Congressman Gohmert said he did. It was a major mistake, and he said so at the time. This is also why he objected strenuously the moment he heard Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein appointed his old friend Bob Mueller to be special counsel to go after President Trump. Congressman Gohmert said, "I was one of the few who were not surprised when Mueller started selecting his assistants in the special counsel's office who had reputations for being bullies, for indicting people who were not guilty of the charges, for forcing people towards bankruptcy by running up their attorney's fees, while the bullies in the special counsel's office enjoy an apparently endless government budget, or by threatening innocent family members with prosecution so the special counsel's victim would agree to pleading guilty to anything to prevent the prosecutors from doing more harm to their families. The pattern is there. Are you seeing it?" Mueller's illegal raid on congressional offices. There is a doctrine in our experiment in self-government mandating that all parts of the government must have oversight to prevent power from corrupting and absolute power from corrupting absolutely. The Congress and Senate are accountable to the voters, as is the president. All the massive bloated bureaucracy is supposed to be accountable to Congress. A good example would be complaints against the Democrat Department of Justice, or specifically the FBI. If constituents or whistleblowers within those entities have complaints, a congressman's office is a good place to go. Our conversations or information from constituents or whistleblowers are normally privileged from review by anyone within the executive branch. It must be so. If the FBI could raid our offices anytime an FBI agent were to complain to us, no FBI agent could ever afford to come forward, no matter how egregious the conduct they are wanting to disclose. Whistleblowing FBI agents have to know they are protected. They always have known that in the past. As I learned from talking with attorneys who had helped the House previously with this issue, if the FBI or another law enforcement entity needed to search something on the House side of the Capitol or House office buildings, they contacted the House counsel, whether with a warrant or just a request. The House counsel, with approval of the Speaker, would go through the Congressmember's documents, computers, flash drives, or anything that might have any bearing on what was being sought as part of the investigation. They would honestly determine what was relevant and what was not, and what was both irrelevant and privileged from executive branch review. Normally, if there were a dispute or question, it could be presented to a federal judge for a private in-chamber review to determine if it were privileged or relevant. If the DOJ or FBI were to get a warrant and gather all computers or documents in a congressman's office without the recovered items being screened to ensure they are not privileged from DOJ seizure, the DOJ would be risking that an entire case might be thrown out because of things improperly recovered and fruit of the poisonous tree, preventing the use of even things that were not privileged. However, FBI Director Mueller seemed determined to throw out over 200 years of constitutional restraints to the wind so he could let Congress know he was the unstoppable government bully who could potentially waltz into our offices whenever he wished. In the case of Congressman William Jefferson, Democrat of Louisiana, Mueller was willing to risk a reversal of a slam-dunk criminal case just to send a message to the rest of Congress. You don't mess with Zohan if the Zohan is named Bob Mueller. That Congressman Jefferson was guilty of something did not surprise most observers when, amid swirling allegations, $90,000 in cold hard cash was found in his freezer. As we understood it, the FBI had a witness who was wired and basically got Jefferson on tape taking money. They had mountains of indisputable evidence to prove their case. They had gotten an entirely appropriate warrant to search his home and had even more mountains of evidence to nail the lid on his coffin, figuratively speaking. The FBI certainly did not need to conduct an unsupervised search of a congressman's office to put their unbeatable case at risk. Apparently, the risk was worth it to Mueller, so he could show the members of Congress who could harass or destroy them whenever he wished. Apparently, the FBI just knew the right federal judge who would disregard the Constitution and allow Mueller's minions to do their dirty work. I read the application for warrant and the accompanying affidavit for warrant to raid Jefferson's office, as I did so many times as a felony judge. I could not believe they would risk such high-profile case just to try to intimidate members of Congress. In the opinion of this former prosecutor, felony judge, and appellate court chief justice, they could have gotten a conviction based on what they had already spelled out in the very lengthy affidavit. The official attorneys representing the House, knowing my background, allowed me to sit in on the extremely heated discussions between attorneys for the House, DOJ attorneys, and to my recollection, an attorney from the Bush White House after Jefferson's office was raided. The FBI had gathered up virtually every kind of record, computerized or otherwise, and carried them off. I was not aware of it at the time that the DOJ and House attorneys, with the Speaker's permission, had cooperated over the years. No congressman is above the law, nor is any above having search warrants issued against them, which is why Jefferson's home was searched without protest. However, when the material is in a congressional office, there is a critical and centuries-old balance of power that must be preserved. The Mueller FBI spokespeople, along with the DOJ choir, assured everyone that everything was fine. They were going to have some of the DOJ's attorneys review all the material and give back anything that was privileged and unlawful for the DOJ to see. Then they would make sure none of the DOJ attorneys who participated in the review of materials that were privileged from the Department of Justice's viewing would be allowed to be prosecutors in Jefferson's case. If you find that kind of thinking terribly flawed and constitutionally appalling, you would be in agreement with the former speakers of the House, the vice president at the time, and ultimately the final decisions of our federal appellate court system. They found the search to be illegal and inappropriate. Fortunately for the DOJ, they did not throw the entire case out. In retrospect, we did not know at the time what a farce Department of Justice firewall would have been. Now, we do. And folks, we're going to stop right there. We're just getting into the story, the real story, the behind-the-scenes story of Robert Mueller, who is doing his best to put and keep his foot on the throat of this duly elected president. Is Mueller qualified? Does he have the temperament? Is he honest? Does he have integrity that office and anybody in it should hold? That's still up for clarification. You're going to have to make your mind up just like the rest of us do. But I tell you this, it's deep. There's a whole lot more there, folks. And tomorrow we're going to come back for more of the Mueller story, Robert Mueller. Thank you for joining us at the Truth News Network. We appreciate you being here. We're going to do this again tomorrow. Don't miss Chapter 2 at the Truth News Network.
But we give you truth to think about. This is TNN, the Truth News Network.
TruthNewsNet.org.